Hello and welcome back to Illumination, the Disney Lorcana podcast. My name is Max.
And I'm Sam.
And we are here to talk to you today about a topic. That's how this works. But first, we have some announcements to make because some things have happened within our Lorcana community that we think require at least minor addressing before we jump into today's topic. The first being the very first Challenger event has now taken place in Atlanta, Georgia, and Lille, France. I hope I said that correctly. Forgive me, all you French listeners. Hi, and sorry. Both events have fired off, and we had two Ruby Amethyst decks in the finals, an Amber Steel Song deck taking it down in France, and in the US of A, we got the event taken down by an Amber Amethyst Mufasa style deck that no one saw coming outside of a select few folks who are rather astute practicers of the set three format past when most people were interested because a lot of us weren't going to the Challenger event, us included. But it was a really cool event to watch. We got to see it streamed. Both places did a stream. I think there was success and failures on both sides of the stream. I think the Europeans really nailed it. They did a great job. Specimen and Lorcana Villain did a great job with play-by-play and color commentaries, as well as the production value coming out of there was fantastic. I think they did a great job keeping track of lore totals. They did a great job of popping up card images.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. In North America, we had two sets of broadcasters. I think that was a little tougher. One of the sets of broadcasters was remote, so didn't quite feel as nice to me to have them. Is a little awkward having those remote broadcasters, at least in my opinion. I much prefer the commenters who are live, and I think that they did a pretty good job. I think Specimen and Lorcana Villain really took the cake with their commentary. In North America, we struggled a bit with lore totals. We struggled a bit with card images.
I don't think we saw any.
It was a rough one from a production standpoint in North America, so I'm hoping to see a little bit more cohesion come out of it. But by all reports, it was a very successful event. A lot of people had a great time. We got to see some really cool things, expected and unexpected, some cool playmats on the prize wall, some prize ticket issues. It seemed like a lot of people weren't thrilled with how things were laid out. I'm not going to really touch on that. But on the whole, by and large, by a good margin, it seemed to be a very successful event for everyone who went and had a good time and everybody who got to experience it from the comfort of home. So thank you very much to Ravensburger for putting that out for everybody to enjoy both in person and virtually.
Mm-hmm.
The second topic is a little bit more depressing, so I figured starting out with the good news was better, but we have gotten word that a tool a lot of Lorcana players utilize, if you're not familiar with it, is known as Pixelborn. It is a way for you to play the game virtually by computer or device of some kind electronically. Unfortunately, the creator of that, Pavel, got a cease and desist sort of from Disney Ravensburger, letting them know that the images are copywritten and the card images can no longer be utilized. Pavel has been more than vocal about the fact that as soon as anybody gives him any word, even a semi-official capacity, to go, hey, can you pull this down? He absolutely would, and he is living up to his word, so Pixelborn will no longer be a tool available to us. It will be missed. Certainly, I think, by a good portion of the Lorcana community. I know some are heavily impacted as there's no chance for them to really play or experience the game outside of this platform. So I'm hoping that in light of that, we'll see some other solutions come up. I know Pavel's already hard at work on something different that is compliant with what Ravensburger Disney wants out of an online, at least will tolerate out of an online solution. So I'm excited to see what he has cooking. And I just wanted to take a moment, and I think both of us would like to thank Pavel specifically and really call out what an amazing job he and the small team under him did to make Pixelborn run as efficiently as it did and to bring such a powerful tool both for playing and tracking to our community, because the game wouldn't be the same without access to such a powerful tool as Pixelborn. So thank you, Pavel.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Let's move over now to the main topic of the episode, now that we've gotten the news out of the way. We are moving on to talking about a bird and a squirrel, because that is kind of where this new meta begins, with a bird, Diablo, a new card from set 4, and Bucky, an old villain from set 2. He's not really a villain, but he is a villain for players of Lorcana who don't like Emerald decks. So I want to address kind of what's going on and what we're doing and how we can break things down from here. So we went from a very healthy meta mm-hmm. with the set three being kind of this multi-choice, you pick what deck, but not every deck answers every other deck kind of format to what looks more, at least initially, and this is not uncommon out of the gate. We talked about this in a previous episode on metagame, so check that one out. We're starting with what looks to be a tier zero metagame. This Emerald Steel deck looks to be the absolute villain of the format, at least initially coming into Ursula's Return, despite the fact there's no green Ursula this time. That was the last set. Mm-hmm. We got purple Ursula.
She is in the deck, though, right?
The green ones are. But the purple ones, the new ones, are not.
No.
So what is the line for this Emerald Steel deck? How does it work? What is it doing that's creating such waves in this game? Well, I'm going to walk you through the play pattern here. Turn one, you play the one-drop Diablo, who is a 1/2 for 1, that when he enters play, he gets to look at your opponent's hand. You don't get to do anything. You just get to look. Then from there, that information allows you to sculpt your plan of attack. The most common and most powerful line out of the deck at that point is playing Bucky on turn two, using the shift from the 3-drop Diablo to discard an action, and then shift onto the 1-drop Diablo. So now that triggers Bucky, which causes you to discard a card, and then Diablo gets to exert and either quest, but even common still to this line, which I know it sounds absurd, is to sing Sudden Chill and force the opponent to discard another card. So they are down 2 cards. So if you were on the play, you're going to be down quite a few cards because you've resourced twice as the opponent get with this going on, and you may most likely have committed some kind of card, played something for that 1 or 2 ink. And goodness forbid if you did something on 1 and 2, because you probably got about 1 card left in your hand at this point.
Yeah.
Turn three, you play Aladdin, the new Aladdin that is a Floodborn or another Diablo, goodness forbid. And then turn four, you play Dreadnought Jafar most commonly, or a different Floodborn of your choice. That's going to lose out on a total of 4 cards at this point, if not more. Obviously, more Diablos and more of these Sudden Chills can change a lot of things. Diablo being able to sing, even just removal ahead of time, can help clear the board. The one drop Diablo can help let the player know if they need to go 2-drop Bucky or 2-drop Ursula to take a troublesome song out of the opponent's hand, like a Grab Your Swords. It's scary what this deck can do. Referring to it as an opening move largely in the community, this opening line, we refer to it here, of course, as a play pattern, is very easy for the decks to do, and it is extraordinarily backbreaking to run your opponent out of resources so quickly. Because remember, in Lorcana, it's not like a Magic the Gathering card where it usually makes you discard a non-land card. This is just wholesale discard cards. Yeah. You're just getting rid of cards. So you don't have any cards left to resource into ink. You don't have any cards left to play and put in to try to deal with this combination of synergistic cards that is just causing you a massive headache. So it's really difficult to go from playing a game on turn two to by turn four, you're top decking and hoping the top 2 cards of your deck are inkable and Grab Your Swords respectively.
And to your point with Ursula, if they play Ursula, they're getting rid of a card that helps you deal with the situation.
Exactly. And that's bad news. So it is an extraordinarily oppressive opening set of maneuvers from this deck, and it is causing a lot of people a lot of outrage, to be perfectly honest. This is the first time we've seen people really freak out. Every time we see a set of cards in Lorcana that tend to work synergistically to do something very powerful, there is often an outcry from the Lorcana community that this is too strong, this is too difficult, you know, the dreaded 3-letter ban word starts to get dropped. I think that this is very, very powerful, and I think this definitely harkens back to when we first saw what Hiram Flaversham could do with some popsicles in Rise of the Floodborns meta, where all of a sudden blue-red became the best deck bar none. Right.
We've seen outcry with blue-red. We've seen outcry with red-purple.
Red-purple. People just sick of red-purple, basically. Yeah. It's really difficult to address how, and this just does something so much quicker in the game than first turn popsicle, second turn one jump ahead, third turn Hiram. That's still quick. It's very quick, and it is, we'll talk about that line of play a little later on, but it is extremely oppressive because at least if your opponent's over there doing that, they're drawing cards.
I was going to say, there's a little difference because you're not losing anything being the opponent of the red-blue player and them drawing cards. You're not losing stuff yourself. They're just gaining.
Exactly, and in this case,
you're doing both.
You're getting card advantage from Diablo while Bucky is also tearing down your opponent's hand. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference there, right? And we did another episode. I'm going to reference a bunch of old episodes here, but some good foundational ones. We did an episode on card advantage. This is not only a tempo advantage, it is also a card advantage at the same time because you're making your opponent go down cards while you're adding characters to the board, which is a way to win the game, while you are, in some cases with Diablo, going up cards. So if your opponent's best answer is to find Hiram to be able to draw multiple cards to be able to pad their hand out, they're giving you cards too. They're never breaking parity with you, ever. You're always holding on to an advantage. No matter what your opponent does, you're holding on to an advantage. It's really strong, and by the time a lot of decks can cobble together a significant answer...
It's too late.
I mean, I remember points when I played this deck initially that I had somewhere in the wheelhouse of like 2.5 to 3 dozen cards in my hand at the end of the game. It's unbelievably oppressive. It is extremely hard to deal with. In addition to the card draw cards becoming worse and the board state expanding and your opponent's hand expanding, which one of those things are you going to choose to address and which one of those things can stem the bleeding the fastest? So your plan of attack has to change pretty dramatically depending on where you're at in the game, right? If you can stop it early, the best thing to do obviously is try to shut down the first and foremost, the biggest threat, I think, out of the gate is Bucky. However, I will not beat around the bush. Bucky is extraordinarily hard to deal with. I'm not going to tell you there is a solution that is just a panacea. Do this and you will always beat Green Steel. Not the case. Sam and I have played decks that were tuned to try to beat Green Steel, and Green Steel still is not a total dog in those matchups. You have the most control over that is to try to stem the bleeding quickly, right? You see where the flow is, you need to stop it right away. Break up the Diablos, break up the Buckies, try to answer everything quickly. It's hard to do.
Would you say the best card to deal with Bucky would be Grab Your Sword?
Grab Your Sword is probably the most played card that deals with Bucky, the cleanest, right? You could definitely go on the play, go Ariel, find a Grab Your Sword, have enough cards in your hand to then use her the following turn to sing Grab Your Sword. But it's difficult, right? Your opponent's now drawn a lot of cards potentially with Diablo. They're going to be able to find a Strength of a Raging Fire or something similar to blow up your Ariel before you can sing the sword, and then they're just going to strip it out of your hand. Or they're going to go, oh, okay, you found that with Ariel, my turn, Ursula.
And Blue Steel, you kind of just ramp to do a quick Grab Your Sword.
Absolutely. So you have to have a plan to do that. And that's kind of step one, is you have to have a plan. You have to know this exists. The only way to go around this or to kind of get an edge here or at least try to have a game here is to acknowledge this is here. It is extraordinarily powerful and it needs an answer right away if you're going to do this. So you need to come up with a plan. Whatever your plan to beat it is, that needs to be your plan. You need to have cards that interact. Swords is the most obvious in the format. I think the next most played in the format is going to be Tinkerbell, Giant Fairy. She can destroy a number of Buckies in one fell swoop. It's not common to see her shifted anymore, but it's possible that as things go on, people are going to get back into 3, into shift 4 for Tinkerbell because she is that. Coming down that much faster is significant. Again, the blue decks have the best ability to leverage Tinkerbell because they can put her down turn 4 naturally. So that's where we're seeing her more at home right now in the early stages of the metagame, is in Blue Steel as an answer to this because she can come down on turns 4. I think at the earliest, turn 2, one jump, turn 3, fishbone, and then play her. We're seeing that. Some less common choices in Steel, Avalanche, which is a new action. They can't take it with Ursula. It'll destroy a location, which is irrelevant, though not entirely, because some decks now are playing the Hideaway, I think, or the Cove, which is the one that gives all, it's a green location that gives all the characters who are there +1 strength and +1 willpower. Mm-hmm. So it lets them survive the initial wipes. Some decks are starting to play that as an answer to the answers. So they're evolving things pretty interestingly. Avalanche helps answer that. Now, if you have 2 Buckies there, blow that up, get rid of those Buckies. That's really nice. Yeah. Some other non-standard answers in Steel, Triton's Decree. It's a 1-cost uninkable card that is fire the cannons, but the opponent gets to pick what character gets the cannons. So if your opponent has out Bucky and Diablo, they have to pick which one is getting nuked and which one is not. I don't love, historically, giving your opponent a choice. That's always one of the worst things you can do in a trading card game versus fire the cannons. But let's be real. You cannot fire the cannons, Bucky. Cannot do it.
Yeah, it's the quickest way to take care of Bucky.
Yes, if you have that on turn 1 and they play Bucky on turn 2, you can then go ahead and decree and get rid of Bucky.
And I do think there's plenty of times where we see just a lone Bucky.
Oh, yeah. Bucky is one of the big deciders on whether you're keeping or mulliganing, or how you're keeping or mulliganing your hand in the Green Steel decks. So there are definitely more than a number of games where my first play of the game is Bucky. Mm-hmm. No question. So that helps beat it. We also see other removal, like Fire the Cannons, Baboom, those things being played as well to answer the Diablo part of the problem quickly. And Baboom, particularly common to see because of its inkability. And the fact that Diablo typically won't be a problem in the ideal line or just played out for us a little while ago.
Until turn three.
Yeah, but most of the time, turn three, it's coming down, they're not getting a card, you're taking care of it and moving on with your life. But it's hard. It's really hard. And then being able to kind of pad your hand out, because so many of the decks, you're talking 20 plus in some cases, Floodborns in these decks that are just so very oppressive and hold the game down and just give you no ability to ever get back in the game. Because even if you draw a few cards, your opponent is just going to then go, oh, okay, and now you have none again. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult. And I know it can be frustrating to deal with, right? Like, we have some decks that can naturally deal with it. Blue Steel has kind of been the forerunner of how the meta is evolving, because Blue Steel's come up and gone, well, we can answer this deck the best.
But there's going to be other decks that people are playing that just answer Blue Steel. So it's a toss-up.
Right, like the Ruby Sapphire decks, which are historically the really tough matchup. And they have a tough time, but they do have some answers, right? They have the big Sisu in their deck that can't be stripped out. And it takes care of all, basically every character that's under four in that deck gets answered. I guess Aladdin doesn't, but with Ice Block, a lot of pretty much every character does.
Yeah.
So that is an answer. It's not a great answer. It's not a cheap answer, but it's an answer. Brawl helps deal with Diablo in the short term. Madame Medusa a little later in the game. Again, Ice Block really helps with the 3-drop Sisu. Yeah. So you can 3-drop Sisu, shift, and then play the big Sisu a little quicker, which is really a good effective line with the paired with the blue ramp. So there's a lot of options there. Mid-range and aggro, I've been having a lot of success beating the deck with Steel Song, of course, because it draws so many cards. Whole New World, very good against the Bucky decks because they can make you discard, but you can just draw seven again.
Yeah,
and definitely. Now you have to go through all that again. But now I found answers and I have singers and I can answer the board more effectively and take over the game.
The new red-purple deck is quick.
It can, yeah, things like Flynn Rider.
If you can just get out those couple
find an answer
in the beginning, it might not matter because the characters in Green Steel are so low strength.
Right. Even the bigger characters, Robin Hood and Beast, only hit for three. So yeah. Queen's Castles are a problem. Mm-hmm. So you can absolutely find aggressive and proactive ways to deal with the threat as well. And of course, the final way to stop it is to learn the mirror. Just embrace it and play it and be the bad guy and learn how do you beat the other bad guys out there. So that is definitely an option as well. Some things I want to call out to kind of just avoid, and one Sam brought up that's a really important one has to do with ramping. One specifically very powerful blue card that may not be as good as you think. What is that card?
Fishbone Quill.
And why is that card suddenly not good?
Because you're then taking more cards from your hand and putting them into your inkwell, which is giving you less cards in hand, and they're just going to be gone before you know it.
Exactly. You don't want to play into it. And the same goes with the play pattern of you brought up as well for a more aggressive deck, is playing too many small characters that may not matter. 2/2s for one and things like that don't add up to a whole lot against the Green Steel deck. Remember, one of these main threats is evasive. So it's going to quest if you're just playing things that can't deal with it. It's going to just keep questing. So that's a big problem. So you don't want to run out a bunch of cards, because then you're going to get rid of all the padding your hand has to hold on to an important answer.
Or the ink you need to utilize to be able to play your answer.
So you got to be careful and pick your moments, pick your cards, pick your battles to play, because it is a crappy thing to have to think about what cards do I want to hang on to because others are going to be discarded, but it's extremely important. If you're a Steel Song player, you know how already the deck can beat you up in the early part of the game and you have to not make plays you want to make because you have to retain inkables sometimes, not dissimilar to that. So it's definitely a skill that is worth utilizing. And kind of the biggest thing is don't be dismissive and give up. Don't just go, eh, whatever, I'm just going to wait until Ravensburger bans Diablo or bans Bucky. Because I'm just, that's stupid and I hate it and it's stupid. There are cards I dislike personally as well. There are cards Sam dislikes that I like. There are cards I dislike that Sam likes. There are cards that we all like and dislike depending on our play style. I just don't want people to get reductive and say this just, quote, needs to be banned. I do think that it can be oppressive. I do think it can be difficult. There are more than a number of times I've screamed and yelled about Flaversham being a 1/6 and having no answer to this stupid thing.
About Fishbone Quill.
Or about Fishbone Quill just allowing starts that I can't keep up with. That's what the cards were designed to do. Do I think that there should be bans one way or another? I don't know.
Not yet, I don't think. In my opinion, I don't think yet.
I'm not even going to give my opinion here because it's not worth arguing with anybody about, because everybody, nobody's right, nobody's wrong yet. We're seeing what develops, which is why, going back to the early announcements, a platform like Pixelborn or some way to garner a lot of results and data is important, because we need to see how oppressive these decks really are. How they feel is one thing, but what kind of data is being put out there to support just how good these decks are? We've all seen small tournaments now. I'm sure we saw the image from Amishi Monday, which was all top 8 of all Greensteel. Mm-hmm. So there are no doubts that this card is powerful. We need results. We need data-driven analytics to actually come up with a real answer. And I think that being dismissive, being reductive, and just throwing in the towel too early, I think is not the way to do it. I think you need to get creative. I think you need to be persistent, and you need to practice. And no matter what, in order to win a game of Lorcana, you need to
keep questing.